I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Fragile. It must be Italian.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. Oh, come, holy faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye, oh, come ye to Bethlehem. Woo! It's Christmas Eve here. It's so funny how that song sounds exactly like We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister. And Dee did not even realize that until it was pointed out by one of his bandmates on tour. We talk all about that. Dee Snider spreading some good cheer coming up on the show. He's got a new musical playing, Broadway musical playing at the Broadway Theater in Chicago. Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas. I went and saw this show. Have you seen A Rock of Ages? It's got the same tone as that. It's very funny, very poignant, a great group of actors playing and singing their own tunes. It's about a kind of a washed-up 80s rock band in 1993 that sells their soul to the devil to become famous. But there's a twist. They sell their soul to Satan, but there's a plot twist that even I didn't see coming. They can't stop playing Christmas music no matter how evil they want to be. They still keep playing amazing Christmas music. And in the end, they learned the true meaning of Christmas. It's a great show. I went and checked it out myself. If you are in the Chicago area, you got to go check it out. It plays until mid-January. And Dee is planning on franchising this. He wants to take it all across the states, have multiple shows running. You're going to see this. He's a real motivational guy. He's a real courageous guy. He's got a lot of dreams. He's very goal-oriented. He reminds me of me. He reminds me of the big guy, Ryback. He reminds me of Paul Stanley, last week's guests, getting huge, great reviews for both of those shows. Go check out Rock and Roll Christmas, Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas. You can still get tickets on DeeSnider.com. We talk all about the infancy of the show, how it came to fruition. We talk about what it's like to put together a Broadway play. How do you even do that? Plus, we hit on his band, Twisted Sister, how they became super huge and then practically overnight had a huge downward spiral as well. He talks about the time in his life, how he managed to come through that to an even better place. Talk about his voiceover work, SpongeBob SquarePants, Celine Dion, Twisted Sister, album, heavy metal Christmas songs called A Twisted Christmas. So many great stories from Dee. He's a super funny guy. I did this backstage at the Broadway Theater in Chicago. People were constantly coming in the room to say hi to him. He's super popular. He's the boss of that production, and everybody loves Dee Snider. So do I. I knew he'd be a great guest. He was a great guest. Listen, you want to buy some Twisted Sister albums? Stay Hungry is still one of the greatest rock records of all time. You can't stop rock and roll. A Twisted Christmas. Let's even get into some of the lesser-known albums like Hot Love. Love is for Suckers was the name of the record. You can get all this stuff on Amazon using the Talk is Jericho links. You know where to find them. You know what I'm going to say. You go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. Easiest way to support the show, because every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. Twisted Sister Records, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? The song, Do You Want to Start a War? The title track. Video is up now on YouTube. The single will start making the rounds, getting heavy rotation in January when the radio stations unlock their playlists. Plus, there's my new book and my third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. People are saying it's the best Chris Jericho book they've read. I have to agree. I love it. I hope you love it too. Actually, but you can go buy whatever you want. Even though it's Christmas Eve, there's still time to buy presents, or maybe you can buy an after Christmas present, or maybe you can buy a New Year's Eve present. You buy whatever you want. You just use my Amazon links. It's not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra challenges. So if you happen to be doing some online holiday shopping, you do it through my Amazon links. You help out this show in the process. You can knock out your whole list, your whole Christmas list, your whole New Year's Eve present list, anything you want. You do it in one shot at Amazon.com. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner. It's at the top of that page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you get all those links in one easy click. Okay. Christmas Eve. I want to wish all you guys a very Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. All right. I got all my presents done. All my shopping's done, thankfully, because I don't have much time. Hope you guys have a great Christmas. Thank you so much for joining me on this show for twice a week. I know there's hundreds and thousands of podcasts for you to schwoz from. I appreciate you schwozing mine over and over again. I'm doing this for you guys. I love doing this show. I love performing for all of you when I'm on the road. And guess what? WWE fans, Jerichoholics, I am coming back to the WWE, the Y2J Winter Tour with the WWE, the Y2J WWE Winter Tour, and it's only select dates. And guess what? All of these dates are live events. I'm doing no TVs. I'm doing no pay-per-views for the months of January and February, only live events. Why? Because I can do that. I like working the live events. I like coming to see you guys. And 2 months is not enough time to come back on TV, so I thought I could still come back. Let me go do the live shows. Take it to the streets. I'll be the reverse Brock Lesnar. I just do non-televised events. If you haven't heard, it's January 10th, Montgomery, Alabama. January 11th, Mobile, Alabama. 16th, St. Louis. 17th, Las Vegas. 18th, Houston. 23rd, Trenton, New Jersey. 24th, East Rutherford, New Jersey. 31st, Edmonton. February 1st, Calgary, Alberta. February 7th, Jacksonville, Florida. 8th, Canton, Ohio. Valentine's Day, I'll be in Tampa, Florida. 15th in Fort Myers, Florida. February 27th, returning to Madison Square Garden in New York City. Classic, famous arena, one of my favorite places in the world to wrestle or to hopefully play in with Fozzy one of these days. February 28th, Toronto, the last date. March 1st, Buffalo, New York. That's the touring schedule for Y2J's WWE Winter Tour. There will be no more dates added, so don't ask me, are you coming here, are you coming there? Those are the shows that I'm coming to. So go click on WWE.com, get tickets, come see me. I'll be rocking it. I'll be doing my thing. You will love it. I guarantee it. And you'll also love the Cinderblock Party World Tour 2015. We're taking it overseas with the Dirty Youth, one of the biggest up-and-coming bands in the UK today. That starts on March 4th in Belfast, 5th in Cork, 6th in Dublin, all those in Ireland, of course. Then we head over to England, the proper UK. You can't say Ireland's part of the UK because it's not, so please don't. Sometimes people make that mistake. Then we're going over to the UK, 7th Nottingham, 8th Wolverhampton, 9th Manchester, 10th Glasgow, that's Scotland, 11th London, the Underworld, it's a big show, 12th in Bristol, 13th Exeter, 14th Southampton, 15th Brighton, those are all England shows, plus one show in Scotland. Then we head over across the pond to Europe, mainland Europe, Paris on the 17th, Pratteln, Switzerland. I thought it was Pratteln, but it's Pratteln. Finally figured out how to pronounce that. My friend Cesaro, who's from Switzerland, told me how to pronounce that, Pratteln. That's on March 18th. 19th is Munich. 20th is Mannheim. Finishing off this leg of the tour on March 21st in Bochum at the Matrix in Germany. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and for all VIP information. We have the best VIP package in the world today. You will get you'll have a great time. It'll be one of the greatest nights of your life. Come hang out with Fozzy. Come see the show. FozzyRock.com. all you need for all the information on Fozzy. All right, Dee Snider of Twisted Sister and of Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas is coming up. But first, I got a very special guest. He's taking time out of his extremely busy schedule to spend a few minutes with us to promote his biggest night of the year, which is tonight. He's getting ready. He's warming up, but he's still got a good 10, 15 minutes to hang out with us. This is iconic. People have been waiting to get this interview for years. Years, and you're talking about Vince McMahon was a tough interview to get. No, no, no. This is one of the toughest interviews you can ever get. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you on the eve of his busiest night, Santa Claus is here.
Hey, Santa, what's shaking, man?
All right, such a huge honor because here on Christmas Eve, on Talk is Jericho, before he gets to work, I've got one of the most coveted interviews you could ever ask for. Excited and happy to be talking to Santa Claus.
Oh, ho, 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 no. It's a pleasure for me, Christopher. It's an absolute pleasure.
Well, I mean, it's a pleasure for me, Santa Claus. I know you got a busy night tonight.
So much to do, much to do.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit HelloAlma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's HelloAlma.com/therapy60.
Where I come from, we didn't celebrate Christmas. Not because we were Jewish, but because my dad was a worthless coward whose idea of a present was a daily punch to the back of the head. He did teach me how to crack a safe, though.
Talk is Jericho.
Getting Chris's coffee because we gotta get coffeed up. I can't get any sugar, man. This is caffeine, the drink of champions.
This is it. Before the show here, we're in Dee's dressing room for the rock and it's Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas Tale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to give you a short one, people out there, it's story of a struggling hair metal band long after the era's gone.
Geez, sounds familiar.
Middle-aged guys and who refuse to let it go in spite of the fact that nobody cares. And in a last-ditch effort to find fame and fortune, they sell their souls to the devil, but they do find the magic of Christmas instead. And you know who Kane Hodder is?
Yeah, of course. Kane played Jason Voorhees in a few of the Friday the 13th
movies.
Yes,
yeah. And he's pretty legendary in
absolutely in the horror movie
world. So he was here last night, and he was watching the show. And, I mean, this show's got a satanic pact. It's got an exorcism, and it has a satanic conjuring. And I swear to you, it's Christmas show, and it's a family Christmas show, and you feel Christmassy when you walk out. You go, man, I've got to feel Christmassy, you know. And Kane Hodder said, you know, I'm watching the show, going, this is getting kind of dark here. And he goes, but damn, if it didn't turn itself around.
Well, I mean, and you wrote this show yourself,
yeah,
from start to finish, everything.
Yes, I did. I wrote the show. It was originally – what happened to my power here? There he goes. It was originally I'm making coffee while I'm talking
it's
to
perfect.
You
perfect. This is the real experience.
This is real. This is my drug of choice.
Behind-the-scenes stuff.
Originally it was a concept album for Twisted. We had success with Twisted Christmas.
Yeah, because you guys put out a Christmas – album of like heavy metal Christmas tunes, basically,
which was everybody said was like the last nail in the coffin of our career, and to which I responded, "What career?" It was like 2000. It was 2006, I think, and you know, and we had just been doing reunion shows, and it was like we were getting ready to like wrap it up, and JJ said, "What do you think of this idea?" I said, "Dude, Twisted Christmas," and I said, "You know, I've always thought about this. I even have ideas. Why isn't there metal versions of Christmas songs? You've got classical, you've got jazz,
reggae versions,
Euro disco dance versions, but there's never metal rock versions, and I had ideas. So we did this record. Everybody's going, that's going to kill your career. You know, what career is that? And
but isn't like the beginning of We're Not Going to Take It also kind of the beginning
Well,
of...
there was also that. See, there's,
oh, Come All Ye Faithful?
Yeah, that goes back to Widowmaker days. Yes, Widowmaker days. I'm riding with Al Petrelli, who you may know from Alice Cooper, Megadeth. He's translated the orchestra. He's played with everybody. And we're riding a car, and we're talking about songs that have... like ripped off other songs.
Yeah.
You know, My Sweet Lord, that's George Harrison, from, and She's So Fine.
She's So Fine, yeah.
You know, and all that. And there's a whole bunch of them. And he goes, and Al goes, yeah, and of course, We're Not Going to Take It, is Oh Come All Ye Faithful. And I'm like, what? And he goes, you don't know that? And I said, what are you talking about, man? He goes, dude, We're Not Going to Take It, Oh Come All Ye Faithful. I'm like, holy crap. All those years of singing in the choir church paid off. It just like, I didn't know.
Subconsciously, right?
Yeah. So that was that, too. So we did, you know, the Twisted Christmas thing came out.
And that was a hit, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was one of our biggest selling records ever and kept us together all this additional time because we started doing Christmas shows. And then I started thinking and I said, well, you know, maybe we'll do a concept record, kind of like a Tommy or The Wall, where we portray another band on stage and to tell this story of this band. And I had this idea. But then when I went to Broadway and I did Rock of Ages, I showed my script for the concept album to my director, Adam Hunter. And that's not me, folks. That's the
that's the coffee.
That's the Keurig. That's the Keurig talking. No, I'm having stomach issues, if you heard that. And he said, he came to me, he goes, I just asked, I handed him a script, I said, listen, man, give me some notes, you know. Came back, he said, A, love it. B, it's a musical. And C, I want to direct it.
Really?
And I'm like, I said, that's what I said. I said, seriously? He goes, dude, I'm telling you, this is, you got to flesh it out, but this is more than just a concept album. This is a musical. And it's a unique musical, and it's different, and it's touching. It's an alternative. It's just like the oddest thing I've ever seen, I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And so that was 2010, and then started the road to bring it to life. And here in 2014, we're on stage.
So what is the road to bring a Broadway musical basically to life? I mean, we're in Chicago, but it's called the Broadway Playhouse. So you're on Broadway, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Well, if the reason for Chicago, you can't – there's an unwritten law that you cannot debut on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah. It's like the Broadway community considers it like you're an affront.
Mm.
You know, so you either got to go off Broadway or you go out of town.
You got to pay your dues to be worthy of Broadway.
Yeah. And there's certain cities that have like a theater scene going on that's very acknowledged and recognized. And there's a bunch of them. Seattle's one. San Diego is one. I'm not sure we're in Florida, but I know there's Florida.
Tampa has a Tampa scene, yeah.
Yeah. There's certain ones and a lot of shows come to these towns. And Chicago, the same people who own the theaters in New York own the theaters here. And Kinky Boots, Cindy Lauper show, it started here. The producers, Mel Brooks show started here. So many great shows have started here. And so it was like, and my lead producer is from Chicago. He said, why don't we try it here? And you know, from being out here in the Midwest, you know, rock and
it's
the
a
Midwest.
Rock area, yeah.
Yeah. It just has a connection. So you got a city with a rock and roll heart, which, you know, New York could be lacking.
Yeah. A little snobby kind of.
I mean, when you play in New York, you know you're playing to mostly suburbanites who are traveling into the city to see
to see the show, yeah.
Because you're not playing to the urban people there because it's just not their bag, baby.
Baby.
As it was once said.
So you came to Chicago. So how do you put together the you have to get funding or like how does it work?
Yeah,
like,
well, you know, all roads lead to Donald Trump. Were you ever asked to do Celebrity Apprentice? Yeah.
I was a couple times.
And what was your?
It wasn't my bag, baby. I just didn't feel it at the time. I did do Dancing with the Stars, but I didn't do Apprentice.
Yeah, I didn't do Dancing with the Stars.
But you did Apprentice.
Yeah, because I danced on Gone Country. I did line dancing, and they told me I was like a spider. I was like, really? What the hell are you doing over there?
Is it at least a sexy spider? Is that good?
I think I was creeping out the female contestants on the show. So it wasn't sexy at all. I figured they must have knocked on your door.
They did a couple times,
They knock a lot, and we could talk about that also. So now I'm putting a sweetener in my coffee for those trying to keep score.
Keeping score of the coffee.
Keeping score. Yeah, so actually, and you know, and of course, Mr. Trump will take full credit, as he always does, for everything. The day I was leaving the show, I had been fired. If you're fired under good circumstances, you get like a farewell breakfast, and the producers take you out. So they asked me what was next. You know, I said, well, I've written this musical, and we're going to start presenting to producers. You know, we're going to get ready to showcase it for them, what they call, have a reading. And Paige Feldman, her name is, very tough as nails producer on the Trump show. You can imagine she'd have to be. It's a tough, that's a tough bunch of people to corral. That's definitely herding kittens. No doubt about it. Because celebrities just don't listen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. They're not listening. It's not like a bunch of, you know, people who want to be on a reality show. It's the celebrities who feel like they're doing you a favor.
Who else were on your show? Was on your season?
Penn Jillette. Penn Jillette was there. Debbie Gibson was there.
Right.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the female side versus Lisa Lampanelli. Lou Ferrigno.
So you've got a lot of people like Dance with the Stars that are famous in other places that come into this world. So it's not the easiest group to manage.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they are not. Yeah. So anyway, but she said, you know, I know a producer. And this producer had, John Yonover, had been on an apprentice show as a judge. Mm. That was because he produced the show Memphis. Mm. And so they, which is, you know, which David Bryan from Bon Jovi wrote the music for.
Oh, really? Okay.
And won two Tonys. I always have any. It's so tough to find life after.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, and I have the utmost respect for anybody who has the cojones. I mean, that's what it takes to take a chance and do something different.
Absolutely.
You know, and David Bryan, it's Bryan, right?
Yeah, David Bryan.
David Bryan was for years scoring things, movies, trying to get into that world. And for him to win Tony Awards, you know, for
it's
his
huge.
Work, it's huge, you know.
And never get any songwriting credits in Bon Jovi, and now he wins two Tonys.
And apparently he keeps his, come in. This is real life.
Is this a coffee delivery guy?
Yeah, I'm in an interview right now. Okay,
how you doing, man?
All right, thank you, bud.
Yes, for him to win two Tonys, that's huge.
Yeah, and apparently he has them on his keyboards on
stage,
sure he does. On tour.
He hides behind them when John's on his case.
That's what I'll tell you. You won't play M&A songs. Two Tonys.
Yeah, two right here.
Yeah, for songwriting. Okay, I wrote songs.
Yes.
I can write songs, even though you don't recognize
that. That's right,
that.
You don't think so.
Yeah, that must be that's kind of funny to think about. But, yeah, so, you know, they introduced me to the producer. And he read the script and flipped. He optioned it. And that was 4 years ago, and we've been on the road ever since. So on the road meaning to getting it done.
Getting it done, right.
But still, it's just a huge it's the toughest thing I've ever done.
Really?
Bar none.
Really? In what way? Just
well, 8 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
But the rehearsal schedule beforehand. And also, you remember, I wrote the show, so as we're rewriting, as we're making adjustments, I'm wearing multiple hats on the, you know, on the set. But then, unlike rock and roll, which, and I'm just scratching my head, perplexed over this until somebody explained it to me. I'll tell you. They have a thing called previews.
Mm-hmm.
They're shows with people paying, and you're doing shows, but you're rehearsing in the day, you're performing at night. And then the next day, you're making changes based on the reaction of the audience.
I see.
Now, in rock and roll, we call that rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
We rehearse, and then we do our shows. Well, I found out that some producer many years ago said, why aren't we charging money to these dress rehearsals? So we'll call them previews. They call them previews, but it sucks as a performer because you feel like you're not really there yet.
You don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. It's your dress rehearsal really sort of weird mode, yet you've got people there and, you know, yeah, it's called previews, but they're watching it, judging it, just
sure.
As any of us would.
Are they
go
allowed
to
the
wrestling world, you know, rehearsal. Oh, we're going to watch you guys.
Right,
we're going
right,
to watch
right,
you guys
right.
train.
But I guess it would be like maybe when you first put together a set when you start a tour, and you know this show, this song isn't really working here. Let's move it here. Let's drop it. Let's cut it. Let's add something.
That
is it that
true.
Type of vibe?
And that is done.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, and this is, you know, to tell a family secret, but you know, Twisted. When Stay Hungry started, we were like the most credible thing in the world.
Right.
By the end of Stay Hungry, we were like a pop band.
That's so crazy.
It's crazy, and you go like, what happened? Like, nothing's changed except the audience has changed. And what's happened is the people who loved you in the beginning, who are your core audience, are now turned off by the fact that their 12-year-old brother or sister is listening.
Wow.
And that pop music fan is listening, and now they feel somehow cheated. So what they do is abandon the band because they've sold out.
Mm-hmm.
When the fact is, all you've done is played the same damn music and on the same show you were doing since the tour started.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's changed, just that people got turned on to you. And the real thing, and this is, you know, as a fan, I always call it the diamond in the pocket theory. And that is, like, when we find a band, and there was a time where I found Queen.
Mm-hmm.
When the early days, I'm not talking about Freddie Fat Bottom Girls. I'm talking when they were a metal band, when they started.
Ogre Attack.
Yeah, Ogre Battle. All that stuff. You know, and AC/DC, mm-hmm. like, out of the gate. You know, you find these bands, and you're trying to tell the world, check this band out. Look at this diamond. And people aren't listening to you. And you're carving the name in the desktop, and you're telling mm-hmm. the world, because you know this band is a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Then suddenly, the world acknowledges that diamond, and it's taken out of your hand. It was yours.
Yeah.
And now it's put on display
yeah.
for millions of people, and you're being pushed to the back of the pack where you're saying,
I was there first.
I was there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, this sense of abandonment, I understand it because I felt it with AC/DC. I felt it with Queen. Like, I had lost something.
When did you feel Queen?
Queen did nothing. Just that it was these people coming up, kids coming up to me going, dude, love Queen's first album, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's like the fifth album. You know, I mean, and AC/DC, yeah. Back in Black, first yeah. record. You know, no, they had like four albums.
Right. They had a whole other singer.
Yeah, they had other singers. They had other, yeah. you know, so.
I had that with Metallica when the Black album came out. It was like, oh, what happened to my band? Now they're like everywhere. I hated it.
Right. Metallica suffered, and it's not the band. And I know Queen didn't do anything. I know AC/DC didn't do anything. It's more just that.
And nor did Twisted Sister.
Yeah, right, that feeling you have of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of lose interest in the band. And I remember coming out for the Come Out and Play tour to start, and we had our usual set of blistering metal, you know. And you know, of course, we always did anthemic things. And walked out, and the first show looking at an audience of teeny boppers.
Mm.
An audience of like Duran Duran, are you going 80s
pretty
stuff?
Much, yeah.
Pop fans, not metalheads, and going, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like while you were away, your audience left.
Yeah.
You know, and you got a new one and they're excited, but they don't want to hear Under the Blade.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear that. They want to hear the fun songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we like literally, like you said, we went and the next day.
It happened so fast. You know, I guess the same thing kind of happened to Kiss, but it was a 7-8 year thing. But reading your book, Shut Up and Give Me the Mic, which is a great tale of rock and roll, of success, of failure, of success again. I highly suggest you go check it out.
And like your own, self-written.
Self-written, right. Every word.
Both of us encouraged by Mick Foley.
That's right.
To try our own hand at it, because people don't do that.
I didn't want anybody touching my story.
No.
Nobody could tell. Like I could. But just reading the book about how hard you guys worked, how big you were in New York, and how legendary Twisted Sister was, and then to see the switch flip so quickly. Because I remember I was part of the fan base. I remember how quickly it switched.
It was ugly. And I, partially, the reason for that is MTV had a lot to do with that.
Overplaying you, or
yeah, well, MTV, you know, and it's not like they get, it was like it was nitrous oxide, it was nitrous for your vehicle.
Mm.
It, you know, it just, it allowed bands to blow up much more quickly. And I recently, there's been people, for some reason I was interviewed, and I had said in an interview that I never expected the Twisted Sister to be as big as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it would just be a band that went around from town to town, as bands like us did. Because we started in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and you just played and sold records, and you mm-hmm. played and you sold records, and it was that kind of thing. And maybe you got a gold album, and you kept doing it, and you know, some and people, you never really had that. You weren't a household word. You weren't on top 40 radio. That didn't happen to bands like us. But with MTV, that just gave a platform for exposure. But it was an intense overexposure too.
Mm.
And you know, I always said that. You know, it was like the comedians who went on Johnny Carson. It was a great thing for their career. Anybody young listening, there was a guy named Johnny Carson, but he before Jay Leno. But like any of those late, but back,
if you could go on Carson as a stand-up, it was huge.
Right,
was huge,
and this is
huge.
Back when there was no cable.
Right.
So there was only 3 or 4 channels. Everybody's watching Carson. But the comedian said it was the greatest thing for your career, but all that material you did that night was burnt out.
Mm, you can never do it again.
You never do it again. Unlike a rock band, who you can play the song, people want to hear the song again and again. if the audience knows the punchline,
right,
the joke is useless.
Yeah.
So that was kind of MTV. We did now go back to Kiss. You mentioned Kiss, you know, and I was a Kiss fan. You could only see Kiss on tour. There was no video.
Mm-hmm.
There was no forum other than going to see them that one moment, trying to take it all in.
Wow, yeah.
And then going back and talking about it, and just your brain was
great
fried.
Point.
Yeah, right? Now MTV comes along, Stay Hungry concert, filmed, shown 18 times in 1984. 18 times.
Wow.
That was our live show.
Yeah.
And sold for the first, now sold on, VHS.
Yeah, I had it.
Yeah. So now you could watch it over and over and over. It really didn't give you that thing where you had to go back every year. You know, why do I got to see him again?
I can just watch it.
I can just watch it again.
That's interesting. That's a great point. Do you think that, and you talk about it in the book, but you kind of had the videos were great. I mean, you were pioneers in that field, having the intro, and it was fun. And maybe you might look at it and go like, oh, this is kind of, I don't know, corny or whatever. But I thought it was great, and so did a lot of other people. Do you think that maybe went too far, though, with like Leader of the Pack and all that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, we'll start, go back. That I wrote the videos. And that got me into the world of writing, and I wrote, you know, since then I've written and sold television shows, movies. I've only had one movie produced, Strangeland.
Right.
I've written a musical now, but that the video idea was out of my head. And Marty Kollner, to his credit, rather than being threatened by this young kid coming in with this crazy idea, he recognized what it was.
Is he the director?
Yeah. And I talk about Marty in the book, who did, you know, that was his first rock video. And he went on to do all the Aerosmith and Whitesnake and just, you know, gazillions, like one of the premier one of the guys. But he was the coolest guy, and he just encouraged me and said, well, what are you seeing? And he said, look, let's work together on this. And so we teamed up, which was just really, that was a game changer for me. But when we delivered that video, no one was doing a story video like that. It was unheard of.
Yeah.
And as I said in the book, and thank you for taking the time to read it, Chris. I appreciate that.
That's great.
I said in the book that when that video was delivered to MTV, Les Garland, the head, he hated it.
Mm.
He said, "That's not a rock video. That's method acting," and that was his exact words. And you know, technically, you had people acting, and rock videos of that day were like a lot of flashing lights and images, and there was no storyline.
Yeah.
So they never let "We're Not Going to Take It" get out of medium rotation at MTV, because Les Garland said it's not a rock video. Now the thing is just like, you know, it's considered one of the greatest videos and inspired that whole new generation.
Sure.
Even Michael Jackson and Van Halen, Teacher.
Yeah.
These things didn't exist before Twisted's video. So when we do "I Want to Rock," which was literally the sequel, Les Garland gets that video and goes, "Now, this is a rock video." It's the same freaking video, just now it's in a school.
Yeah, of course.
So, but that's the way of the world. But, yeah, that video was a game changer for everybody.
Yes, sure it was.
So I loved it. But you went to what you said. But now I became really a megalomaniac. I just lost my friggin' mind because I had success.
Mm.
And finally, after all those years of saying, now I could really say to everybody, which was stupid, and wasn't listening to anybody. And by the time we got to the Leader of the Pack, somebody pointed out that I had literally written the band out of the script.
Of the video, yeah.
And they're in there physically, but we're not playing.
Mm.
We never pick up an instrument.
Hmm.
And after the fact, somebody said to me, and I was like, whoa. You know, like, I got so carried away with the creativity of writing a script that I lost sight of the fact that we were first and foremost a rock band. And what message does that send to your audience when the band is just there as a prop?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. Plus, playing a cover song of a 50s tune or whatever it was.
Everything was a wrong call. I know, and I thought I was so slick because Twisted... Yeah, we used to play that song in the bars, and we used to play. That was like very popular. We used to do when we would do in the early days. We would do it, and back then it was cool. But the whole everything had changed. Like I said, the perception of us had changed.
So
coming out with that song, with this video, where the band's not rocking, the wrong song, the wrong video, the wrong everything, it was just a kiss of death to the band at that point.
Right, right, and that was kind of like you said, it was only a matter of time until you were basically done. After being working so hard to get there.
And to come out and play a record, people go, that's great stuff on there. Yeah, but, you know, it's perception. You know, if I had, and I actually I actually counseled Skid Row with their follow-up record to the first one.
Oh, Slave
of the
Grind?
Whatever you do,
yeah,
come out hard. Mm. I said, because I remember talking to Snake and Sebastian and everybody, and I said, because we ended like you ended on I Remember You.
Mm-hmm.
And right now your fans are going, are they a metal band or are they a pop band? And we made the mistake of coming out with a pop song.
Wow.
After the price and all the publicity and all that stuff. And we could have come out with something on there like I Believe in Rock and Roll or Kill, you know, just something come out with like a sledgehammer and have people go, oh, they're still a metal band, you know. But no, the moron. I'm pointing to myself. It's radio, I know, but I'm pointing to myself. The moron went with a big pop song. I thought I was so slick that I was going to win over the entire world. But when I told guys at Skid Row, and they came out with Monkey Business.
Yes.
And they came out hard.
It's a great point, man.
Yeah, and so they were paying it. They listened.
Thankfully.
They saw me driving, whatever it was, driving my Ford or whatever. Whatever it was. I said, listen to that guy. He lost everything.
How did you feel when Come Out and Play basically came and went, and you kind of had all gone away so fast? Like, what was your future? What were you thinking?
You know, it the ego, and this is again, I feel I know your listeners haven't read the book, and you have, but it's the ego that gets you there won't allow you to believe it's over. Mm-hmm. And people say, how do you lose everything? And there's most people know I didn't drink, I didn't do drugs, I was in control of my destiny. There was no, I can't blame a manager, blame anybody. I can only blame myself. I was driving the damn. I was driving the freaking boat, whatever it was, as it was going down. And you're just the ego that got you there won't allow you to believe it's over and do a smart thing and say, you know what? The money's, I got to pull back, because save the money you've got. No, it says next album, next tour. You borrow, you advance. Mm. You're so, that same crazy ego, I can fix this, I can fix this, I can fix this. And then one day people saying, yeah, we're not giving you any more money. Mm. And we don't want to do another record, and you're done. And the band breaks up, and you're like, whoa, I'm like $1 million in the hole.
Wow.
I'm picking an arbitrary number, but I'm sure it was that.
Yeah, close.
And I've got and then the music scene changes, then grunge hits. Mm-hmm. And it's like you spent a lifetime learning a form of medicine. It's like I specialize in working with cancer patients, and then they cure cancer.
Yeah,
and you're like, what? What? Wait, what?
Yeah, what?
But this is what I do.
I've got a common cold.
Don't
need
that anymore.
Yeah.
we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
It's like everything, the way I moved, the way I sang, the way I wrote songs, the way I thought.
You're a rock guy.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
An old school dinosaur rocket.
Right.
Legs spread, none of this legs together crap. Like you just had your gym shorts.
Great point, man.
Gym shorts pulled down around your ankles. I was like, that's what those bands look like.
Great point.
They're jumping up and down like someone just pantsed them. No, legs spread, man. Show your junk.
Yeah.
It's all about showing your junk. So
there's the quote of the show right there. It's all about showing your junk. I mean, how old were you that time, like in 91, 92?
Early
40s?
We were older. I remember turning 91. Yeah. Okay. So I was approaching 40 at that point. Yeah.
So still a really young guy, but feeling like a dinosaur in your 30, in your late 30s. It's like not a good place to be.
And you're married. You got three kids now.
Wow.
And you've run out. You've just used all the money, and no one wants to lend you anything. You've done one thing with your life. You focused on one.
That's all you've
thing.
Done.
That's all you've done. I was myopic. And I always felt that myopicness, that focus is what drove me. And I still think it did. At the same time, when it gets taken away, it leaves you with no options. And I literally was a point where at one point I was riding a bicycle to a desk job for $200 a week answering phones.
Wow.
And this is 1992. All right. So, and people are coming into the office going, aren't you? And I'm lying, and I'm going, no. And they're going, wow, you look just like him. And I'm going, I know, it's crazy, right? If only. And
that guy's rich.
Thankfully, people can imagine that a rock star could make it and lose it all in just a matter of 5 years' time.
There's a great story in your book of you flyering cars for your wife's bridal makeup business.
Yeah.
And the cop chasing you or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was that moment, which, and I actually start my book there.
With that, yeah.
And I was, my wife Suzette, you know, I talked about it before, to her credit, you know, like when I lost everything, she was like, you know, as I had no work, and she had a hairdresser's license. She did all the costumes and makeup, the bone
for the
logo,
band, yeah.
Everything. She was like the force behind
and
it.
She's a really pretty girl too. You really overmarried in that
yeah,
case.
Yeah.
You got lucky. That's just the personality that got her.
Yeah. Believe me, she was repulsed. It was. She used the word repulse. You repulsed me, and that's the girl. I gotta have that one.
She actually used the word repulse.
Yeah. I don't want this skank.
I don't think I've ever heard that word used in a sentence before.
Yeah. I don't want this skank who actually wants to be with me. I want this girl who's running the other way.
Who I repulse.
That shows that, because that shows intelligence. Fear is a sign of intelligence. You see a guy like me coming to you, run. But she said, well, you know, I can go work in a salon.
Mm-hmm.
And she literally worked in a salon, like washing hair, which is like the most, most menial job mm-hmm. in the world. But this is the kind of girl she is, and this is how desperate we were. And she said, you know, I can make like $100 doing makeup for weddings on weekends. I said, well, cool. You know what? I'll go to these bridal expos and I'll put flyers on cars. So I remember this moment. I'm literally at this lowest point. I remember I'm it's raining. I'm out flyering cars, which is moronic, really, because they get wet and they're useless. But I start getting chased. And first thing that happens is another guy flyering cars sees how fast I fly our cars, because I just want to get out of there before anybody recognizes me, and offers me a job. He says, hey, dude, you're really good at that. You want to fly our cars for me? I'm like, no. Pull my hood up. So now the security starts chasing me out, because they don't want you in the parking lot flying cars. Yeah. And I'm running for my life. Because not because I'm afraid of the wedding expo security staff. It's just I'm going, they're going to recognize me and go, what are you doing here in the parking lot? It was just so humiliating. But my wife was picking up $100 doing a wedding on a weekend, and we had three kids.
It's almost like that movie The Wrestler, if you've seen it, with Mickey Rourke, where he has to get a job working in the deli.
Of course I've seen it.
You know, and they're like, aren't you Randy the Ram? And he's like, no, I'm not.
Exactly.
Like, wow. So what was like the first project to kind of pull you back out of this? Because you do a lot of stuff. And obviously now here we are, you know, backstage at your Broadway play.
Voiceover. Yeah.
Wow.
The Howard Stern and Howard and was a godsend to me. He the first person to recognize me to have value beyond just a couple of songs.
The band, yeah.
He saw my personality. He saw my voice. He saw my talent on
Is
the air.
Is that from being on his show?
Yeah, I did. There was a time when he was in New York where I would do the show 3-4 times a week. I would ride into the city with him and his limo in the morning, and then we would ride and we'd do 5 hours of show and I'd ride back.
Okay.
With him. I'm going to turn this off. There's a speaker in the room. We're gearing up for the show, but we're still good, man.
Okay, cool.
So, we're good. So, and he would, but he, would encourage me. He said, man, you could do radio. You could do voiceover. You're good. And he literally introduced me to agents and would go into agents at the Don Buchwald Agency and say, you really should talk to D. I think he'd be really good. To have that kind of guy stepping up for you, just when he spoke, even when he was just in New York, he was such a powerhouse.
Right.
People would listen. So I got a voiceover agent, and they sent me out, and I booked. And I remember we're broke, and I get people don't know, but the voiceover people are happiest people in the world. You get paid ridiculous money. You get residuals, which means money every time it airs.
Like commercials
whatever,
yeah.
And I started getting commercial work, doing voice work. And so that was the first, and that started like, whoa.
What was the biggest commercial that you did?
The biggest
one. Because I know I've heard your voice on a few things.
You know, I've done a whole bunch of stuff. The one, but you're not from the New York area.
No.
The one that got me out, there was a local lottery commercial called Quick Draw. Quick Draw from the New York Lottery. A game this good comes along only once every 5 minutes. And it was, and they just was like used and used. And my mailbox starts filling up with checks. I mean, thousands of dollars.
Wow.
And we're broke. And so it was like, oh, my God. So that happened. Then I got I wanted to get into radio, and I was struggling. I met an agent. He said, look, dude, no one's going to give you a show just because you're D.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I got like a 10 to midnight metal show Sunday nights out on a little podunk station, $3.57 an hour, doing everything myself. I didn't even pay the gas. I used to go and just do everything myself. I did that for a year. And that led to the House of Hair, which is now in its 18th year.
Wow.
I just recorded show 893.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How many affiliates?
Over 220.
Wow.
In North America.
It's amazing.
So and then I did mornings. So radio. Once I started doing radio, then I started. Now I had a career. So radio and voiceover, and then other things started to happen. Then Celine Dion.
This is another thing that I was gonna. I thought about it while we were sitting here. You wrote a song or songs.
Song singular
for Celine Dion.
But I didn't write it for Celine. My wife. In the height of my metalheadedness,
right.
She said, "Write me a Christmas song." And I said, "What are you, insane?" I said, "Christmas songs are genre specific. You like, when's the last time you heard a new Christmas song that sounded Christmassy? You don't. It's so rare,
right.
You know." Because and she goes, "Well, you can do it. You're a classically trained countertenor," which I am. I was a classical singer.
Mm-hmm.
Even while I always the same. I was always in the choir, singing rock, and So I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I get this idea, pops in my head, not a rock song. It's a Christmas song. It just flies in my head. I can't even sing it. It's out of my range. Mm. So I hire people to do it. I record it as a gift for my wife for Christmas.
What's it called?
It was called God Bless Us Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I give it to her Christmas. Well, one of the engineers, a few years later, becomes a Grammy Award winning producer named Rick Wake. And he calls me one day and he goes, and we're friends. He goes, "Are you sitting down?" And I'm like, "Yeah, why?" He goes, "Celine Dion wants to record God Bless Us Everyone." And Celine at this time is still big, but she's Celine.
Yeah.
And I was like, first thing I said is, "Does she know who wrote it?" And he said, "I didn't tell her yet." I said, "Do not tell her. Satan wrote a Christmas song." He goes, "Seriously?" I said, "Seriously, dude. Just put it on that freaking album."
Yeah.
He goes, "Well," he goes, "one other thing. She wants to change the name to The Magic of Christmas Day. God Bless Us Everyone." I said, "Rick, I don't care if she calls it. This song is a pile of dog. Just put it on the album." 8 million copies
later. Is that
later,
what it sold?
8 million internationally. And then it was on Rosie O'Donnell's Christmas album. Sold another 2 million. We call our house the house Saint Celine built.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, so
is this singularly written by Dee Snider?
Dee Snider.
So you get full publishing.
Yeah.
Wow. And this is it a Christmas album that she released?
Yeah, yeah.
Eight million copies.
Yeah. Every year it's on the radio, and it's the finale of the rock.
Dude, that
Christmas
is so band. Insane.
And it's the only song I ever wrote not to sell.
Yeah.
Not to record for money.
And of course, it's the biggest seller you've ever had.
I think ultimately, as it continues to get covers and stuff.
Have you ever met Celine?
No. I've heard that she found out years later and was very confused.
That guy?
Yeah.
That guy wrote it?
Because we were huge in Canada.
And you were, yeah.
And she's like, the one with the makeup. The bone.
Big giant blonde hair. The bone, yeah.
Very confused.
Wow. See, but that's the thing, though. You had the experience, and even though you had these horrible times, you still had influenced a lot of people, give a lot of people a lot of joy, and you could still write a song. So even though you're having these tough times, you must have known deep down inside, like, man, I know I can do something to get back.
I believe in my creativity, but you and I both know that does not guarantee. There's
That's
so
right.
many talented
That's
people
right.
out there, so many great musicians. And this is something I said in my rebuttal to Gene Simmons in his Rock Is Dead.
Rock Is Dead, yeah.
Thing, is saying, first of all, he says, where are the Dylans? Where are the Pink Floyds? Where are the Henry? They're there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they don't get a spotlight shine
right.
on them anymore. There's so much talent out there. And it sucks that young bands can't even expect to make a living doing
yeah.
it. But you know what? They're still doing it, and they're doing it for all the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They freaking love it.
Mm-hmm.
And but the talent is out there. And I knew I had the talent. But will I get the chance again? Will
right,
someone
right, right.
shine the light and say, hey, Dee Snider, that's a really good thing you wrote, or Dee Snider, it's a good song you wrote? Because it was just falling, I was trying for years after Twisted's demise with Desperado and Widowmaker and just failure after failure. And I knew I was writing good stuff. It just wasn't, I wasn't in vogue. The music scene had changed, and it just.
It's when you started doing things outside the box that it started happening again, Now, we're talking about Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas Tale. Do you sing in the show?
I do, actually. I do, actually, sing in the show. Of course, people would be kind of upset if I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, this is a show where there's actually an encore. And I come out for the encore, and they let me tear it loose a little bit.
Yeah.
Because wearing a sport coat and sitting in a narrator's chair is, while it's entertaining, isn't what I do.
Right.
So I get to tear it up at one point.
Is there a difference between singing on a Broadway stage and singing on a rock show across
well,
the stage?
Well, within the show, huge difference. And that is sort of rude awakening of theater. In rock, you face your audience. You face, you look into the beast,
eyes, yeah.
And you confront, you know, and you could probably relate to this a bit from your wrestling days. In Broadway, you don't look at the audience.
Mm.
You don't acknowledge the audience. The whole thing is you're not supposed to react.
Right, that's
or
the third
break
wall.
Character.
Yeah.
They call it the fourth wall.
Fourth wall.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right? So, so that was really weird for me to not acknowledge a reaction or lack of reaction. And one night in particular, I was in the show Rock of Ages, and by this time people have seen it. And the movie is Tom Cruise insisted they rewrite the show because he wanted to be brooding. He's an idiot. That was like terror. He ruined the show.
It did.
It was a great
show.
It
is a great show.
Funny as hell.
Yes.
But my character, I played Dennis Dupree, the club owner.
Mm.
And when he finds out that in the end, while he's still on stage, that there's a soliloquy, and they find out that a couple of years later he dies, and he's on stage when he is. And he, wait, what? He's like, wait, what? He goes, yeah, man, you're dead. You know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on stage doing his part, and it's a very funny moment. And a guy in the front row goes, "Thank God." And I'm sitting, he's right there, and I'm looking at the other actor, and I'm going, now, this is a rock show? What did you say, mother? I'm like, I'm stopping the song,
yeah.
You know?
You're going old school D. Snyder.
Yes, yeah, but I'm a theater now. I had professionals.
Yes.
That had to bite me. I'm like, and walk off stage.
This is the guy I remember one time in the Winnipeg Arena, you guys were opening for me, and some guy had his hand on the stage or something, and you stepped on his hand. He said, "Get your hand off my stage." And I was like, yeah.
What are you, in show business?
Yeah, exactly right. Speaking of Twisted Sister, I mean, you guys still do shows? You still do? I know you did. I think it was Vakken last year or something.
Yeah,
or
less and less and less, but still together. I mean, we've got a couple shows booked. I mean, basically, as you know, life goes on. I'm not about living in the past.
Sure.
I love the past. I'm proud of it. I love the guys. And when we get together, it's a blast. And the audience is great. But I'm always trying. I'd much rather show you, hey, look at this thing I just made that nobody gives a
crap
about.
Right, right,
but
right.
I'm so
of course.
Into this because it's now and it's something I'm passionate about now. And I know you can understand,
I understand that. So.
Because you're proud of what you do, but you always want to be challenging yourself and you want to find something new. And some things work and some things don't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And but as a result, as more and more things work, and as more radio and theater and things like that start, I have less time to go what I call Back to the Future. Great Scott, Marty! It's a Twisted Sister reunion show! They're alive! But when we do, we freaking tear it up. We have some of the best reviews of our lives, but I think it's mainly because they're shocked. They're like,
you're still around.
Yeah, holy crap, they're still like running around and he's in shape and he's nuts.
Well, you're in great shape and you're still a great singer too,
which is
killer. Yeah. We played Download last year. I didn't get a chance to come see you. We were playing right around the same time as you were. We were on one stage during the other side.
We tore it up pretty good.
Yeah,
we tore it up pretty good.
It.
I think Fall Out Boy was on stage at the same time.
That's right, exactly. What, last question, what's your favorite Twisted Sister song or some of them besides the obvious ones?
You know what? I never say the obvious ones, and it's not. And I love the obvious ones
sure.
for obvious reasons. They've provided me and my family because now that things turned around, and I got out of that hole, and the licensing thing has come into play.
They're in commercials.
It's crazy the revenues that they generate.
The SpongeBob SquarePants. My son sang that song when he was 2 or 3 years old. It's like, that's not the original. SpongeBob wrote this song. Yeah. No, he didn't.
I just want to say,
Goofy Goofer.
People said, how, you know, I remember, I tell you the call. I get a call, D, the SpongeBob movie wants to use I Wanna Rock. I'm like, awesome. Oh, I know, it's a six-figure deal. I got two kids in college.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes. He goes, one caveat. And, I didn't know it was a six-figure deal. He goes, they want to call it Goofy Goober Rock. I was like, are you kidding me? My song? What? How much?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do
it. Goofy Goober it
Goofy
is.
Goofy Rock. Just put it on the freaking album.
He used to go nuts when that song came
out. Yeah. So that was my favorite song is, because Twisted is for most people, it's just sort of pigeonholed and defined by a couple of anthems, which I'm proud of, but we were way more than that. We come from an era where we judge bands by a body of work. Mm-hmm. But MTV, and when you cross into the pop world, you become defined by a song. Mm. And so for me, it's You Can't Stop Rock and Roll.
Wow, yeah.
You Can't Stop Rock and Roll because we are a metal band. We always were a metal band. And it's an anthem in its own right. So it sort of combines, to me, you know, what Twisted really was, a metal band, but an anthemic one.
Sure.
You know, so, yeah. And that really is a song that defines that.
You always
and that song is the show, too.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. This is like kind of a mix of jukebox, Twisted stuff. Because remember, I told you it was supposed to be a Twisted
concept album,
show.
Right?
So I wrote it with Twisted music and Christmas music and then some original new stuff. And then it got turned into a musical and the music stayed. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see the show, man. It's great to get a chance to come see
Brother.
You. Always a blast. Thanks for the coffee. I will be in the front row. I'm going to stay for the whole thing. I'm not leaving because you told me if I leave early, I have to sit in the back.
Yes.
So I ain't doing that.
You got a good seat then.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, man.
Best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.
Thanks, but I don't sing.
Oh, it's easy. It's just like talking, except louder and longer, and you move your voice up and down.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
All right, thanks to Dee Snider. Such a positive, fun guy. Love talking to him. And remember, if you live in Chicago area, if you're coming in from out of town, there's still time to see his Broadway musical, Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas. You can get tickets at dsnider.com. You won't regret it. It's so funny. It's a great show. Very proud of Dee for putting this together. Thanks also to Santa Claus for coming and being on the show. Hopefully he finds some chimney sweeps tonight when he's delivering his millions and millions of presents to everybody's house. Remember, even if you don't believe in Santa Claus, be careful when you're walking around today because you might bump into him. He's a big, big, jolly, fat guy, so be careful. And if you feel like rocking to some classic Twisted Sister Christmas carols, they sing about Santa. They sing, "Oh, Come All Ye Faithful." It sounds exactly like "We're Not Gonna Take It." It's great, remember? We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it. Oh, come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. How did Dee not know? It's so close. It's like Wild Thing and Louie Louie have the same riff. How did they not know? Wild Thing. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, we gotta go. Dun, dun, Louie Louie. Dun, 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 dun. You make my heart sing. See, it's the same riff. How did Dee not know that? Hey, listen, you could go check it out for yourself. You can buy that Twisted Christmas. You can buy it on Amazon. Get the new Fozzy record. Do You Want to Start a War? You buy that on Amazon. You get the new Chris Jericho book, The Best in the World at What I Have New Idea, the third New York Times bestseller. You get that on Amazon. Remember, if you're going to do that, use my Talk is Jericho links. Great, easy way to support this show. You can find so many great things on Amazon. You can buy anything you want on Amazon, and you know how to find my Amazon links, right? Say it with me now. Say it together. 1, 2, 3. Podcast1.com. And click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Podcast1.com. And click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top. Then that's hard to chant, but you know what I'm talking about. You click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, Canada. Hey, every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to this show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done. You're helping me out in the process. It's the easiest way to support this show. So thank you so much for being here during the Christmas season. Hope you got a little Christmas cheer with Santa Claus and Dee Snider on his Rock and Roll Christmas. We'll be back on Friday, but in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. And on Friday, it's London is Jericho. I did a live show, a spoken word show back in the summertime in London at Leicester Square Theater. Got some Q&A's from all you fine people. Got a lot of great questions who came out over those two nights. Two sold out shows. I'm putting it together for you on Friday. London is Jericho. Come check it out. You have a great Christmas. I hope you get all your dreams. Be good to each other. Love each other. Happy birthday, Jesus Christ. We love you too. And a big yeah, boy. We'll see you on Friday.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
I could feel the Christmas noose beginning to tighten. Maybe what happened next was inevitable.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Rider Carbon Action 2-inch Airwings Ball Arrive.
No, shoot your eye out.
Oh, no, it was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out.